You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our latest podcast, Nick Lee. Technically, Nick, it's still Thursday, but it's a kind of an emergency podcast because we've got a few topics that are kind of pressing we need to talk about. So this is supposed to be our Blue Friday show, but we're doing it a little bit early, a Thursday night live stream. Looking forward to chatting about some of the breaking news, the latest updates on a certain quarterback, number three. We'll be breaking that down throughout this episode and starting our free agent frenzy, which is one of our favorite things to do on this podcast. So a jam-packed show coming your way. So let's get rolling here. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We are now in week three, the end of the third week of the saga that is Russell Wilson versus the Seahawks. We know how this started, Nick. It opened up with Russell Wilson coming out shortly after the Super Bowl and speaking out publicly about his concerns about pass protection, being tired of being hit, and wanting to go deeper into the playoffs and having more involvement in personnel decisions. Basically, the whole nine yards, everything he threw out and indicated that he was frustrated about. The Seahawks, in response, per reports, they haven't come out as a team and said this, but they were not happy that he decided to go public on those issues. And now we have an article dropping yesterday, or actually this morning, from The Athletic, Mike Dugar and company, an outstanding piece that takes a closer look at this fractured relationship between the team and the player.
It was a great read. Just as a fellow aspiring sports journalist, it was a good read and good research. And this is something that I think we both can agree that we kind of knew that this was out there, but this today really, really blew it up and made it a national story. And talk about your lead story. This is the lead story throughout the country. Russell Wilson was the number one trending topic on Twitter for most of the day. And I read that article, and the thing that stuck out to me that I'm trying to take positives away from this because, yeah, it sucks that your franchise quarterback is unhappy where he's at, and there's maybe a small chance that he's not a Seahawk next year. But the part I was reading where he's watching the Super Bowl, he's sitting there next to Commissioner Roger Goodell with the freshly minted Walter Payton Man of the Year. And he gets to watch the Super Bowl there with his wife, Sierra, and he's seething. I like that. He's watching Tom Brady, who got to basically handpick his team, and his jersey is pretty much clean the whole game and pretty much slaughter the Chiefs. And also he's watching on the Chiefs side, maybe not during the Super Bowl itself, but as a team, Patrick Mahomes is let loose by Andy Reid's offense and system and Eric Bieniemy's offense and system. And he's watching these two teams go, man, I'm that good. I should be in this game. And he's seething about it. And I think that part is healthy because I think we all can agree that at some point there's been times where I'm like, you know, Russell Wilson, I wish you'd, you know, throw a chair, throw a headset, or, you know, grab someone's face mask. You know, it's not always I try to be a nice guy, but sometimes it's like, oh, good try, guys. We'll get him next year. Like, that gets old really fast. The little Disney, like, we tried. Now that I think that Russell Wilson is dead. This is a brand new Russell Wilson, and some good can come out of this. If these two sides can repair this and fix this, boy, there's going to be a new Russell Wilson in town.
Yeah, that was one positive I took from the article. Unfortunately, there weren't very many of them if you were reading closely. The two things that really jumped out to me, one, the reported meeting that Russell Wilson had with the coaching staff before the Arizona game. Now, I had heard some grumblings during the season that this happened. I just didn't have the details that happened to be in that article. But the grumblings that I had heard was that Russell Wilson had met with the team and it didn't necessarily go well. I didn't have the specifics, but they were outlined in this article. He went in, he's made some suggestions for how the offense could get turned around. This is coming off the game in Buffalo as well as their game against the Rams. They lost both those games. Wilson had a bunch of turnovers. He went in, he told the coaching staff what he believed would help the offense, and ultimately they ignored his suggestions, and he ended up storming out of the meeting is what the article said. So that really stood out to me. that really tells you the gap between the quarterback and the head coach as far as offensive philosophy. And we saw the rest of the second half played out, and certainly everyone played a part in that. Russell Wilson did not play well in the second half of the season. Pete Carroll probably meddled too much of the offense, and it's not the first time that he has done that. And Brian Schottenheimer, quite frankly, just didn't make some of the adjustments that were necessary. So a little bit of blame for all parties there, but that jumped out to me. And going back to the Super Bowl game, I think that was really the clincher for Russell Wilson. You can look at it from a positive spin as you did, but I also look at it, you mentioned Tom Brady being able to pick his own roster. That's true to an extent, but he did sign with a team that already had a ton of talented players and had underachieved in recent years. Then he was able to say, I want Rob Gronkowski. I want Antonio Brown. I want Leonard Fournette. Go get some of these extra really talented players to put with a talented roster. That was one of the most talented rosters in the league. They absolutely looked like a Super Bowl team throughout the regular season. There were a few mishaps during the year, but when they were playing at their best, they looked like a contender, and then they put it all together in the playoffs. So just saying Tom Brady handpicked all that team, to me, isn't accurate. But Russell Wilson looks at that and he thinks, I want that autonomy. I want the ability to be able to go out and get the players that I want. I want to be more involved in the personnel decisions. To me, that really was the breaking point for him, where he's like, you know what? I can't hold this in anymore. This, you know, it's the airing of the grievances. It reminded me of Seinfeld, except it happened in February. And
it's not December 23rd.
Dan Patrick Show. He made it known with the Seattle media. And here we are. And so this is what I'm going to say. I've all along, based on the sources I've talked to, and I still believe Russell Wilson's a Seahawk in 2021. I don't think there's any trades coming, but I underestimated this situation the last few weeks, even based on the sources that I've talked to that are well-informed. There's not just smoke. I don't know that the building's burning down yet, but there definitely are some flames visible right now. This is a situation that is at a critical stage right now. The Seahawks have to make the right choices here over the next few weeks once we get into free agency. If they don't, and you send the wrong message to your quarterback, then this is something that could be beyond repair very quickly.
Yeah, I agree that there's smoke, and you know the house isn't quite on fire, but I think the bacon was in the oven too long, or the grease has got a little hot, and the fire alarms are going off in the kitchen. But you can contain it, you know, smother the, don't put water on the grease fire, but smother it, you know, but don't let it spread. And this is fixable, I think. I agree. I think if these two, there is time, and there's a relationship there to where they can repair this. And, you know, it's like a marriage. You know, we always say, oh, ex coach is married to ex quarterback. And I think to an extent, that's a proper way to describe it, because I've been married for 7 years to the same woman. And, you know, that takes some give and take, some compromise, some, you know, things get heated a little bit with disagreements. I mean, we're pretty different people, and that's okay. I think in some ways opposites attract, but you know, and at the end of the day, I think sometimes after I'm thinking back to the, you know, some of the bigger fights, we haven't like had these crazy fights as a couple, but after the bigger fights and we really lay our hearts out there, I think we're stronger for it. And our relationships are stronger for it. And I think that if this goes the right way, again, I'm trying to take a positive spin here, that this really could be a hopefully, if they can repair this, a way to move forward with a stronger relationship. And I have my doubts with that, honestly, just because, you know, Pete Carroll's been there a long time and he's been doing his way of football for a long time. And it's worked, to his credit. He is one of the very few coaches that's won a BCS title, or a college football national title, and a Super Bowl. And it's worked. And why would you stop doing that? And then Russell Wilson's looking around. Yeah, the Patrick Mahomes, the Tom Brady, the Lamar Jackson. Like, look around. Why am I handing the ball off 40 times a game with all these guys chucking the ball around? So yeah, it does take two to tango, and it's a relationship, and it needs fixing. Something definitely has to change, otherwise it's not going to get better until these two sides really sit down and figure it out.
Yeah, and I think that's going to come. They've already had their discussions. Russell Wilson's made that clear. He's already talked to Pete Carroll. Now the article indicated that discussion didn't necessarily go as planned or as how Wilson hoped. But again, we'll see what they do in free agency. Adam Schefter reported earlier today that Russell Wilson's agent, Mark Rogers, indicated they haven't demanded a trade, but it was kind of odd that suddenly they had four pretty specific teams that, well, if the Seahawks are going to trade him, these are the four teams he would waive his no trade clause. Speaking of relationships, that sounds to me like there might be some flirting going on outside of the marriage a little bit. But nonetheless, you look at the Cowboys, Raiders, Saints, as well as the Bears, those four teams that were outlined in that report, none of them necessarily line up with what Seattle would need to be able to pull off a trade right now, especially with Russell Wilson's cap hit. And I think a lot of these discussions are going to continue playing out because it's the offseason. But at the end of the day, the Seahawks have to find a way to make this right. I still think they are going to. But as I said, this is something I've underestimated to an extent. The Seahawks, there has to be some urgency here to be able to build the team around Wilson the way he sees fit, adapt the offense the way he sees fit to an extent. And if Pete Carroll's not willing to do that, then I do think there's a breakup coming, most likely in 2022. There's a long offseason still waiting, so we'll have plenty more to talk about as this story continues to develop, whether you want to hear it or not. In my case, I'd like to see this slip by, but I know as a reporter, it's not going to. So we'll get to talk more Russell Wilson in the third quarter, getting some input from our listeners, some really interesting tweets coming from many of you about your thoughts on the Seahawks and Wilson, everything else revolving around the star quarterback. But first, when we come back in the second quarter, we're going to start our free agent frenzy. Every Friday for the next month, we're going to be looking at certain position groups, some players that may or may not interest the Seahawks. And Nick, you and I are excited about it because we're going to have a little bit of money that we can spend. And I said a little bit for a big reason there, because the Seahawks don't have much money, but we're going to have a little bit of money to look at some free agents. And you and I are going to start constructing a free agency plan here on our podcast. So don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, shows, and reality TV, real-time updated odds, and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. And we're back here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our early Blue Friday show, my co-host, Nick Lee. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to be doing this over the next 4 weeks, Nick. It's one of our favorite segments throughout the year, Free Agency Friday. It's a free agency frenzy, and the Seahawks right now don't have much money to use. In fact, if we're looking at effective cap space with the cap being lowered to around $180 million, the Seahawks barely have over $1 million right now. That's it. Basically, they have enough to go buy a reserve tight end. They don't have cap space, but as you and I have talked about on earlier shows, they have options to create cap room. Several of them, they could release some players. They could do some extensions. A few guys like Russell Wilson could be restructured to have their base salary turned into signing bonus and open up some cap space immediately for 2021. So you and I decided, and I think this is on the high end, this would be based off a bunch of different moves, but you and I have estimated the Seahawks have $30 million to play with for free agency in 2021. And what we're going to do, we're going to start off with offensive skill players, and we've got a cluster of running backs, receivers, and tight ends that you and I picked out. And we're going to discuss some of these players that have different price points, and ultimately you and I are going to decide which ones we think the Seahawks should sign.
Yeah, we'll start with running backs, and for me, this is one of those weird positions where you have your your everyday running back in Chris Carson that will hit the markets, and we're staring right in the face of Rashad Penny era, which is a bit scary because he is he's not been healthy and he's been kind of disappointing, honestly. But this is his time to shine. So whether you want to sign someone to usurp him as the starter or someone to complement the bevy of running backs the Seahawks already have, a guy that I'm going to go to bat for, unsurprisingly, given the sweatshirt I'm wearing, is a guy named Jamal Williams. And not just because he's BYU's all-time leading rusher, but I want to throw out a stat. You know, Pete Carroll's all about risk management. And that article actually really spelled that out nicely. And I think I wholeheartedly agree with that. Pete Carroll, almost to a pretty much to a fault, is all about risk management and mitigating risk. And Jamal Williams is the definition of a safe play. He has over 650 touches in the NFL since 2017, zero fumbles. So that's pretty safe. That's when you talk about preventing turnovers and not giving the ball away, Jamal Williams is about as good as it gets in the backfield. And Aaron Rodgers, very complimentary of his former running back. And Jamal Williams has expressed his interest to go back to Green Bay. But if that doesn't work out, I think the Seahawks do need to take a good, long, hard look on him, because he's got 2 years of over 500 yards rushing, and he had 741 yards from scrimmage last year, three touchdowns, and really has been a consistent complement back to Aaron Jones over there in Green Bay. And another thing is, since he was kind of that complement back, he's not going to break the bank, about $4.5 million. So that's a place I would start for running back, because he won't break the bank. He's a reliable guy that doesn't fumble. He's been productive in the past with a great quarterback. He knows what it's like to play games in January. That's where I want to start. I know there's a lot of other good ones on this list, and you know, I'm sure you'll lay out a few more.
And I like Williams. My concern is with him being a guy that hasn't really been a starter in the league, but he's coming from Green Bay. I have a feeling he might be one of the few backs in the market that maybe makes a little bit more money than I'm comfortable paying. If I'm the Seahawks right now, I just re-signed Alex Collins. Yes, Rashad Penny's been injured a lot, but he's shown flashes, and this is going to be an offensive scheme with Shane Waldron that I think is a good fit. DJ Dallas, I still think, has a lot of potential as a complementary back. Travis Homer is a third down guy that you can use. I think the running back group they've got right now is pretty solid if you upgrade the offensive line, and we'll get to that next week on our Free Agent Friday. But I look at the backfield, and I don't think they need to make any big splashes. If they were going to add one more veteran, maybe bringing Carlos Hyde back at the right price makes sense. But I'm going to bring back an old friend here, potentially. Mike Davis with the Carolina Panthers last year had over 600 rushing yards. He was filling in for Christian McCaffrey. 3.9 yards per carry, not a great average, but he scored 6 touchdowns on the ground. He had really good numbers as a receiver. That's an underrated part of his game. He knows your system. I think he's a guy that can run that wide zone effectively in Shane Waldron's system. He's going to bring you that hard-nosed veteran that can break some tackles, not necessarily a truck stick guy, but I just look at the fact that he's familiar. And even though he played well for the Panthers last year, he's a 28 going on 29-year-old running back with this depressed market. I think you can bring him back around $2 million and maybe have a few incentives on there for playing time. And I think he liked playing in Seattle. I think you can get him for significantly less than Jamal Williams, and I think the production is going to be pretty similar as well.
Yeah, I like the Mike Davis option because, like you said, familiarity. And he had a pretty decent run with the Seahawks in 2018, especially was with the team with 2017 as well. 4.6 yards per carry in 2018, 514 rushing yards, 728 yards from scrimmage. So a sneaky, productive 2018 from Mike Davis in 2018. I think he's a bit of a fan favorite too. I've seen a lot of response on Twitter about him becoming a free agent. Say, hey, bring this guy back to Seattle. And I think as a compliment, if you truly are going to have I think we are moving towards a stable of running backs. I'm not sure we're ever going to see the bell cow again in the true sense of the days of past, and unless there's a truly special guy around. But I think he's a guy you can add to your stable, and it'll be a different enough approach from the Rashad Pennies and the DJ Dallases, and add a bit more to the offense. And yeah, over 1,000 yards from scrimmage with the Panthers in a kind of a broken season. I think that's a really, really good pickup. And yeah, I agree. I think if you can get him around for $2 million, I would concede Jamal Williams to get a Mike Davis for around $2.5 million, especially with the limited cap space. And really, I wholeheartedly agree that the bulk of the money really needs to come with the offensive line. You got to shore up the offensive line. I don't care if it's Russell Wilson. I don't care if it's Derek Carr. I don't care if it's Taysom Hill back there. You need better offensive linemen, so you got to save the money for that. So maybe go on the cheaper and maybe on an upside here with Mike Davis and see if you can squeeze a little bit more juice out of that lemon.
Yeah, there's a couple other veterans out there that maybe the Seahawks will look at, but Leonard Fournette, players like that, I just think either going to be too expensive or it's just not necessarily a great
fit. I like James Conner too.
The running backs that they have. I just don't think it's a big priority position. I would rather upgrade the offensive line because I know the organization's still high on Rashad Penny. He's going to be coming off an offseason that he's not rehabbing. And so to me, that's a big deal. And Alex Collins played really well in limited action last year. I don't think that it's an understatement to say there's a chance he could compete for maybe a starting position next year. He's going to be the guy pushing Rashad Penny, and that's good news for the Seahawks. I just don't think it's a position they have to prioritize. Now, wide receiver, I have been going to bat for T.Y. Hilton for several weeks. So I'm not necessarily going to change my tune on this show because this is a depressed market. Right now, SpotTrack has Hilton getting paid $10 million a year. I don't see any way that that is going to happen. He's going to be 32 years old. He had under 800 receiving yards last year. He was still productive, but he is not the 1,000-plus yard receiver he used to be. And some might say, well, you're making an argument for not going after him. But as a number three receiver, if the market's as depressed as I think it's going to be, and you could get him for $6 or $7 million with his ability to create after the catch, his slot and outside versatility, he would still be the one guy, if I have the cap space, him or Josh Reynolds, because of his familiarity with the Rams system that Waldron's going to be running, some of the same wrinkles bringing it to the Seahawks offense. Those would be two receivers I'm looking at. I'm not looking at some of the bigger names like Allen Robinson, unless somehow Tyler Lockett gets traded, and then you might look at a bigger name receiver. But I think right now Reynolds and maybe Hilton are the two guys I would go to bat for, because I do think they need to add a upgrade at the number three receiver position. And they just don't have many draft picks. It's a good receiver draft class, but you might have to look closer at veterans than maybe you would do in other seasons.
Yeah, I like Josh Reynolds. I think that's an easy, maybe lazy answer with Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, coming from L.A. I think that there could be a couple holdovers coming over from L.A. We'll talk about maybe another one in among tight ends. But Josh Reynolds has been sneaky productive last year, 618 yards, two touchdowns. Never really been the guy at receiver. And really with the Seahawks, he doesn't need to be the guy or even, you know, option B. I think if you bring him in as a third option, I think that's a solid option, because, heck, it was better than whatever the heck you got from Philip Dorsett, because you didn't get anything. And I think he would be a clear up. So really it comes down to, is he an upgrade over David Moore? And or, you know, Freddie Swain or one of those guys. And I think Josh Reynolds absolutely would be another guy that I'm keeping my eye on as well, as DeMarcus Robinson from Kansas City. Comes from a great system. You know, they got fast guys that can catch the football in Kansas City. And I think he would even be a little bit more cheaper than Josh Reynolds, maybe, you know, $3-5 million in that range. So I absolutely agree that the Seahawks need to address the wide receiver position. And especially if you want to keep Russell Wilson happy, you got to give him some more weapons. Because they are losing several. And I think it can't just be the Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf show. You got to have some depth behind them, some protection, if you will, in the lineup, to use a baseball term. And I think either Josh Reynolds, T.Y. Hilton, I think is a bit on the aging side for my taste, but I see your point. I probably would opt for Josh Reynolds. I know Curtis Samuel is another one that people are excited about, but yeah, I think he'll be way too expensive. Corey Davis.
He's going to cost too much.
Corey Davis is another one that I think will be pretty expensive, but another one that, if I don't know, the price drops, I would definitely take a closer look.
Yeah, again, there's so much uncertainty with what kind of money is going to be thrown around by these teams. Because if you've looked at a salary cap sheet for all 32 teams, I think half the league is in the red, and a good chunk of that half is like 10-plus million over the cap. And there's a bunch of them with way more than that. You have teams like the Saints and Eagles that are truly in salary cap hell. So I don't know what the money's going to look like in free agency. Some of these guys might be much more affordable than anticipated. And even though the Seahawks don't have a lot of cap space, they are in a better position than a lot of the other teams in the league, particularly your teams that are perennial playoff teams. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with the market, particularly at some of the skill positions. I want to talk tight end, though, because I've changed my tune on this, especially with the fact the Seahawks are clearly emphasizing the position. They have called the Eagles about Zach Ertz. I was able to confirm that with multiple sources, that they had interest in maybe doing a trade there. Didn't necessarily come to fruition yet. Jonnu Smith, the tight end that really broke out for the Titans last year, just 25 going on 26, really athletic tight end that's improved at blocking. They are going to aggressively make a run at him unless there's another move at the position. Gerald Everett, former Rams tight end, familiarity again, that's another guy that fits this system well. So I actually think I am now leaning towards, I would rather invest, if you're going to put more money into a true number three receiver. I think in this offensive scheme, it's not Brian Schottenheimer calling the plays now, it's Waldron. They are going to throw the ball to their tight ends. I actually am all in on Jonnu Smith, and if you can't get him, then you've got to get Gerald Everett. Get an athletic tight end that can catch the ball that fits this scheme that is going to allow them to be featured as receivers.
That makes sense because, you know, you watch Rams offenses. Sure, they're high-powered, but they're not the empty set, five wide receivers, all running speedy routes, and that's not how they operate. Gerald Everett had some pretty consistent, productive years. He didn't put up, you know, mind-boggling Pro Bowl seasons with the Rams, but two straight years of over 400 yards, which, you know, with a third or fourth option at receiver, that's a pretty solid number in my book. So that's, and being familiar with Shane Waldron, I think, is a big thing there. I know where this is cheating, but I still would love to see Jacob Hollister come back. I know that he might not fit the system as well as he would for Brian Schottenheimer's system, but I just think he's one of those guys that found ways to produce. He might not be the prototypical blocking tight end that just happens to get open, like maybe some of the more Ramsier tight ends are. Jared Cook is another one. I know he's a bit of an aging guy, but he's still been uber productive throughout his career. And I think that's another one that they can look at. And he made $7 million last year. I just with his age, I don't think, especially with the suppressed market, supposedly, I don't think he'll make nearly that much. So I think Gerald Everett, we have about $5.5 million. Jonnu Smith, you mentioned investing. That's a big word because Jonnu Smith would probably flirt with $9-10 million. Jared Cook, probably $4-5 million. So if you really want to go all in and get a quality tight end that's young enough that still has plenty of upside and also has produced in the past and has that dynamic ability as a tight end in the system, I think Jonnu Smith is definitely your guy, and you're going to be paying for it.
Yeah, I think this is my viewpoint in the offseason now, and these things are always evolving, but I think if the Seahawks can go get themselves a really good tight end that's younger, that's still got room to grow as a player, and they get an upgrade to the center position, maybe a player like Corey Linsley. We'll talk more about those guys next Friday, but I think if you can knock those two things out, those are the two big keys as far as their offense right now with this new scheme that they're going to be running. They need to get a tight end that is going to offer a bit more versatility than what Jacob Hollister does. Maybe you can bring Hollister back too and have him as an extra tight end. It depends what his price point is going to be, but I think a player like Jonnu Smith makes a lot of sense, and Gerald Everett would be a really good fallback option for him. But in this simulation, I'm putting my money into Jonnu Smith, and I think if you were able to sell him on the scheme and look at the numbers Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett put up in L.A., and you've got Russell Wilson throwing to you, assuming Russell Wilson's going to be the quarterback, then I think you could sell Jonnu Smith on Seattle very quickly, and it would make a lot of sense to me. That's actually the only guy from this group right now I'm spending any money on, because I just don't think free agency in the skill positions that they're necessarily going to need to spend a lot of money. They're really going to focus on the line, which we will get to next week on our Friday show. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to keep talking about Russell Wilson, but a little different spin here. Wanted to get some input from you, the listeners. We've got tons of tweets reacting to the latest news revolving around Seattle's star quarterback and the situation with the franchise. We're going to be looking at how fans are feeling 3 weeks into this saga and as we get closer to free agency and the draft. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your podcasts. Nick, we were talking in the first quarter. It seems like every day there's been a new development on the Russell Wilson versus the Seahawks front. Today, the article dropping from The Athletic, looking at the broken relationship between the player and the franchise. And then, of course, the reports from Adam Schefter. Russell Wilson doesn't want to be traded, but if he is traded, these four teams, we would be willing to waive our no-trade clause on. It was a really weird, kind of bizarre report. And so that left me wondering, what's the pulse of the fans out there? How are the fans feeling about Russell Wilson potentially wanting out? How the Seahawks have put themselves in this position, or the player has put himself in this position? And so we ended up dividing our responses into four different classes. There really are four different groups in terms of how fans are looking at this situation. And I think we've got to start with what you and I aptly named the meh class. And what we mean by that is generally the fans either aren't surprised or it just isn't a big deal.
Yeah, I think these might be the most exclusive group. I think most Seahawks fans have a wild reaction, a hot reaction either way. I commend these people, first of all, for being level-headed and, you know, maybe more have more perspective as maybe perhaps our elders in this scenario. And I think Christopher Holmes, our first one at Guitar Coder, is the first one. And he even says, maybe it's because I'm older, but this whole situation moves me very little. Everything comes to an end. And given how Pete's managed the Seahawks the last few seasons, I haven't had a lot of faith this would end well anyway. So shrug. That's surprising, because that's about as a passive as I've seen anybody. And I commend you, Christopher, for having a mature approach to this. And yes, all things do come to an end. And we know that Russell Wilson's not going to be playing for the Seahawks when he's 72 and Pete Carroll's 107. You know, it will come to an end eventually. But we hope it's not in 2021. I think we all know this is Russell Wilson's prime. The Super Bowl window I've been preaching will be open as long as Russell Wilson's in his prime. So props to Christopher for having a mature level headed approach to this.
Man, he wasn't the only one either. Dominic at 0.exe said literally nothing in terms of feelings about this news story. Pete will keep doing what he's been doing. Russ will try his best with what he's been given and will be perennial playoff contenders with a small shot at the Super Bowl any given year if the stars align in the playoffs. So a pretty positive approach, but at the same token, it's like, I just expect nothing's going to change. We're just going to keep seeing what we've normally seen. It's really a nothing to see here approach. I will say most fans are not in this group, though. And that leads us to the next one, which I would say this is probably the biggest group of the three. And you and I aptly named this one the Pete, we have a problem division. And this is your group that isn't necessarily pleased with Pete Carroll saying, hey, your offense is archaic. You haven't changed anything since the 1980s. Russell Wilson's a top five quarterback. It's kind of like Dr. Phil sitting there. What are you doing? And so these are some interesting responses here. We've got it from Kaiza Ann. I have been a Seahawks fan from 76 and seen so many bad quarterbacks. Respect Pete, but the game has changed and he hasn't evolved. Russell Wilson needs to be better, but all those last-minute comebacks have taken a toll. He can't do that every game, and Pete Carroll sets up games like that. Hashtag Team Russell. And I saw a few other people put that hashtag. And so clearly there are a lot of fans that are in Russell Wilson's corner because they feel that Pete Carroll's offensive approach, ball security, protecting the football, running the ball, they feel that that is preventing Russell Wilson from really truly being able to carry this team to the heights it's capable of and returning back to the Super Bowl.
I feel like I'm back in middle school with Twilight. Team Edward, you know. I heard all about that in high school or middle school. Yeah, this is kind of where I'm at with this. I'm halfway between the both people are to blame and let's come on, Pete. So Kaiser, I'm kind of in your group. I have not been a Seahawks fan since 1976. I was not born yet. So props to you for sticking through, because as far as I can tell from you, Corbin, and from others who I've known that are older Seahawks fans, those are some brutal lean years before the 2010s. So another one is Richard Lee is another one in this camp. Says Russ plays this year, then he gets traded next summer for probably all. Seattle uses those picks to back Pete, draft more players that fits his philosophy. More misses from John Schneider. Seattle also will face two problems with their roster. More young guys like Jamal Adams and DK Metcalf will take up big contracts, and older vets who have been good for us like Dwayne Brown and Bobby Wagner will eventually retire. And I think, you know, there is some, I don't know if it's cynical or not, but that's an approach, you know. If it could turn out to be, it's Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll. They both can't exist in Seattle anymore. I'm hoping that they choose Russell Wilson in that scenario, but, you know, they can cut the player. I guess you can fire the coach, but, you know, that is a dicey situation. And, you know, the pessimistic view of the draft, that's another thing. If the Seahawks do trade Russell Wilson and they get all these draft picks, there is no guarantee whatsoever that those draft picks will amount to anything close to what Russell Wilson's brought.
Yeah, I think we need to move on to the next group because that's a perfect segue there. We'll move away from the anti-Pete group, which, again, there are plenty of arguments against Pete Carroll's approach and necessarily not working with Russell Wilson. But this is the group that I think is the second biggest, and this is probably the one that I align with. Everyone is to blame burn it down division. And we saw plenty of fans that were in this spectrum too saying, look, Russell Wilson is to blame. Pete Carroll's to blame. Brian Schottenheimer is to blame. The equipment man is to blame.
Everybody
is to blame for what happened to the Seahawks in the second half. And I'm going to start here with Jenny. Jenny, she tweeted, disappointed given how much Russell Wilson makes and the talent we had. This was our year. Didn't happen. Offense died in the back half of the season. They are all to blame, including Russ and the coaching staff. Big question is, where does this team want to go from here? Fire Pete, trade Russ, and then cry emojis. So there are plenty of Seahawks fans that feel that way with the news that has come out here. And it does, it kind of creates that doomsday scenario if you are a diehard Seahawks fan, because you're thinking, oh my gosh, we're pitting our coach that won the only Super Bowl for us and has led the team to the playoffs all these years against the most successful quarterback easily in franchise history. It's the type of battle as a fan you don't want to see. And yet right now it's almost looking like the old West. We're waiting for them to draw here in a few minutes and see who wins. And that's not what you want to see if you're a Seahawks fan. You're hoping somehow a peacemaker, maybe it's John Schneider or Jody Allen, steps in the middle and says, get the hands off the guns, guys. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, and Jenny, I think I'm closest to Jenny here on this, where I'm disappointed. And because the Seahawks had that just amazing start to the season. I read that in the article where they, you know, Russell Wilson, if the season ends in five games, unanimous MVP. I mean, it was amazing to watch this team just put up points willy-nilly and at will. And then as the turnover started, and Russ, you could clearly see Pete Carroll kind of going into his chest. And I'm here as well with, you know, this where it takes two to tango, because Russell Wilson also played like crap last month or so of the season. And Pete Carroll, you know, got conservative. And so both sides kind of went into their corner and were lesser to themselves than they should have been. So, Jenny, I'm right there with you.
And this is kind of one of the situations, I think we can bring Brian Schottenheimer back into it. And I'm kind of coming to his defense again, because you've got the coach in one hand, one corner, saying, we need to stop turning the ball over, a more conservative approach. And then Russell Wilson's kind of pulling back. It's tug of war. And he's saying, no, I still want to sling it. Remember what I was doing 3 weeks ago when we were throwing 500 touchdowns every game. And Brian Schottenheimer sitting in the middle like, what do I do? It kind of seemed like a situation where he couldn't win, especially with all that we now know, especially that meeting that the coaching staff had with Wilson before the Cardinals game. And so it does seem like this truly is one of those situations where it's way more complicated than just saying Pete Carroll won't listen to Russell Wilson and that's why we're here. There's a lot more to it. There's a lot more blame to pass around with the way things unfolded at the end of the second half. One other tweet in that comment section I found interesting here was from Robin Solari. I love this team, but I hate the drama. Will Pete Carroll change? I love Pete, but his stubbornness and inability to adapt are getting to be a critical issue he needs to address. Russ needs to acknowledge his role, missing easy throws and open receivers second half of the season. Will they? So again, tackling the idea that, sure, Pete Carroll, he's got to make adaptations. He's going to be 70 soon, so can we really expect that? If you're being a cynical, maybe not. Russell Wilson, you had checkdowns that were open receivers that you didn't throw the ball to, you double clutched on, you took sacks that you shouldn't have taken because you held onto the ball for 9 years. And the offensive line's going to get blamed for that when they shouldn't be. So it's just, again, there is so much blame to pass around when you look at this football team. And I think it's a perfect segue now for our last division. We've had the people that blame Pete. We've had the people that blame a little bit of everybody. We had the meh not really a big deal to me anyway. I was kind of expecting this. And there's one last division we have to cover here.
There is. And it's the we deemed, it's been pretty much the theme of the whole day here on Thursday. I'm going into Friday this week, and it's the Russell What the Hell division. That's basically been the whole day. Not that's 100% of the blame's on him, but it did come out from that camp, so to speak. I love this guy's Twitter name, or maybe it's a woman. I guess I shouldn't say that. Just a dumb sports fan. Bad touch at Bad Touch 83. And there's a lot of dumb sports fans out there. I'm one of them. He says, just tired. Just might just be me, but he's coming across as a diva. Trade him, and let's see how well Pete can coach. And I would say that's one of the rare sentiments coming from this is, yes, the D word has been thrown around a bit with diva. You know, as soon as you hear a guy maybe throwing teammates under the bus or coaches under the bus or thinking himself above the team, the D word, diva, does come out a lot. And I think sometimes rightfully so. I'm not sure I'd call Russell Wilson a diva here. I don't know if I'd go that far. Trading him away and just, let's see how well Pete can coach. I think we've seen about as well as Pete Carroll can coach, and he's a heck of a coach, borderline can't and bust kind of coach, but has he bumped his ceiling? And honestly, Russell, I tweeted about this morning, Russell Wilson's kept a lot of people employed for longer than maybe they should have. And I don't, maybe Pete Carroll's in that camp where he's kind of ridden on the coattails of Russell Wilson's success and luck that they got getting him. And boy, seeing how Pete can coach, you know, we'll see how he does with Tua or Taysom Hill or whoever they get.
Yeah, it's interesting because you can look at it from the other end of the spectrum that, you know, maybe, and I don't know if you can count on this because the Seahawks roster construction the last several years has been a lot more hit and miss than it was during the early stages of the John Schneider, Pete Carroll era. But, you know, there might be some, and I've seen some listeners that have tweeted stuff like this today that, you know, Pete Carroll is a consistent winning coach, 10 plus wins every year. A lot of people can say Russell Wilson's the reason for that, but you know, maybe we go out and get another competent veteran quarterback that maybe isn't quite as good as Russell Wilson, but now we have more money we can spend on our offensive line, getting weapons around him. The defense is what won that Super Bowl back in 2013. Maybe they really go all in on people. I know there are a lot of fans. The majority of fans don't want that. But I know that there are some that are looking at that and saying, you know, it does reach a point eventually where I don't care how good Russell Wilson is, you reach a point where it's time to just cut our losses. And I don't think the Seahawks have reached that point, but certainly that is something that could happen down the road. And one last tweet here from Jeff Holyfield. He said, I love the Hawks. I'm a big fan of Russell Wilson. That being said, I feel like a lot of the issues Wilson mentioned are on him. I would love to see him play in rhythm and throw on time instead of always waiting for the big play. And that leads me to really my closing remarks here. If you want to compare yourself to Tom Brady, if you're Russell Wilson, that's the comparison you're looking at. He constantly talks about his legacy and talks about being the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Tom Brady's got 7 rings now. Russell Wilson has 1. He knows that this is a critical time for him. But when you're trying to compare yourself to a player like Tom Brady, can you have similar success going after Lombardi trophies? Sure. What you can't do is put yourself in a bottle where you're comparing yourself to a quarterback that has a much different skill set. Russell Wilson and Tom Brady are just different style players. And so I think sometimes that Russell Wilson, talking to management and when he talks to the media recently, I think he puts himself in that class, and maybe he is a top 2 or 3 quarterback in the NFL. But comparing his situation to Tom Brady when you consider the different types of players, the way that their careers have unfolded, isn't necessarily fair. And so when you're talking about legacy and stuff like that, I think that is something that needs to be kept in mind, that some of those risks that he takes, maybe he needs to go back, look at a film, be like, look, those end up working out really well for us sometimes, but it hurts us a lot of the time too. You don't want to take all the aggressiveness and ability to make plays that are broken into big plays out of Russell Wilson. But at some point, you got to dial back on that a little bit. And I think that is something that's a key for him. And maybe Shane Waldron can make that happen with his scheme.
Yeah, my closing remark, you know, is just, like I said, it takes 2 to tango. If you've listened to me through the various shows I've done with Corbin in the past, I'm a big believer in only Siths deal in absolutes, as Obi-Wan Kenobi said. And I'm a wholehearted believer in that. It's not all on Russell Wilson. It's not all on Pete Carroll. there is on both sides. I think Russell Wilson, again, played like crap the last month of the year, the last month of the season, held onto the ball far too long, played hero ball far too often. And I think Pete Carroll did go into a shell after those couple rough games against the Bills and against the Rams. And I think that was a problem. And I think, you know, maybe overcorrected after that. And maybe they do weather that storm and come out of it better if they still let Russ cook after those five games and after that rough stretch. But there definitely needs to be concessions and, some tough conversations ahead, because I don't think that the Seahawks need to knee-jerk reaction and start looking for trades and just end it right there. I think that would be very, very unwise. It'd also be equally as unwise to ignore this and just go into camp next, summer and pretend like this didn't happen. I think this needs to be addressed, and that needs to be addressed. Messages need to be sent by the Seahawks to Russell Wilson in support. You know, go get Lindsley, the center, all-pro center. Go get the prize guards or interior linemen in the draft. Go get a good receiver in the draft. You know, build around him and send a clear message to Russell Wilson, like, you are our quarterback. We're going to build around you, and we're going to go get another Lombardi because you are our quarterback, and you've been with us for so long that you can't let a good thing like this crumble so quickly. Franchise quarterbacks, it took Cleveland like 30 years to find a franchise quarterback, and even that's still kind of up for debate. You know, they don't grow on trees. You got to keep one when you can. Russell Wilson's one of the best quarterbacks of this generation. You can't let him go.
Yeah, that's the bottom line here. The Seahawks can explore the possibility of a trade here, but from a salary cap standpoint, from a talent standpoint, there's just way too much risk here. You've got to do whatever you can to help Russell Wilson and to make him feel like you're 100% committed to him and his playing style, and be willing to listen to his suggestions. That doesn't mean make him assistant general manager, though, either. Russell Wilson can't be demanding that. I don't even think Tom Brady would qualify as that. The Buccaneers still made plenty of their own choices. And so you have to consider all of those things. And there's going to be a long offseason. We say it time and time again. There's going to be a lot more storylines coming out behind this. Hopefully there will be some positive ones soon, that there's some progress made between the Seahawks and Russell Wilson as we get closer to free agency and the draft. You can follow me on Twitter, Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. Make sure you're subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Just check out our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com, and feel free to leave us a review. When we come back on Monday, I'll be joined by Rob Rang, and it'll be Mock Draft Monday. We'll have some new requirements for those of you that love putting together drafts each week that you have to abide by, and we will be reading through several of those on the show Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Go Hawks.